This podcast series is brought to you with the kind support of Romco Metals, producers of truly green aluminium, copper, and other non-ferrous metals from the African continent, dedicated to decarbonizing supply chains across the globe by recycling our way to a sustainable future. Romco, invest, reduce, and grow. As well as Mbuyu Capital Partners, an investment company focusing exclusively on Africa, managing portfolios of funds and direct investments for institutional clients and impact investors. Our next guest recently moved from a financial services job in Scotland back to her home country of Nigeria. Hear how her love of learning and never passing up an opportunity has fueled her sense of adventure. I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces Focus podcast, Nigerian Voices, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of Nigerian voices at home and away. I'm joined today by Toyin Alaladi, whose last role was as a senior strategy manager at Royal London. She previously worked in a range of financial roles, including at Standard Life and in a marketing role at Moody Monday. She recently left Scotland and returned to her home country of Nigeria, and it was a moving LinkedIn post that she wrote there that led me to her. Welcome, Toyin. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Ethan. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're joining us here from Lagos now, and I'd love to talk about your journey that took you from Lagos originally to the UK, ultimately into investment. Can you talk us through that, please?
I actually grew up in Nigeria, in Ibadan, which is a different part of the southwest of Nigeria. And I left Nigeria just after I did my A-levels. I went to London for uni, so I went to London South Bank University. And that's basically where I studied my electrical and electronic engineering degree. So I kind of like to say that I stumbled on the world of investment because it wasn't really something I was thinking about throughout my degree. I'd always been thinking, you know, maybe I'll do it, follow through with an engineering career. And that was kind of the plan. But when I graduated, it was 2008. And many people remember that, you know, credit crunch. Lots of companies were impacted and the roles weren't that many out there in demand. And I've been applying for engineering roles. I've been applying, I sent lots and lots of applications out with very, very little success. And so I just decided, actually, why not broaden my search into other sectors? Because I believe that I had, you know, skills that I could transfer into other sectors. And actually, you know, I think it's quite important to be adaptable. So that's what I decided to do after I'd been, you know, applying for so many jobs and hadn't got one. So I started applying into other sectors, and financial services was one of them. And I thought, you know, a strong sort of engineering background with great math skills, analytical skills, and some of the skills you learn whilst doing an engineering degree would put me in good stead there. And so that's actually how I landed a graduate program spot at Standard Life, which is now Standard Life Aberdeen, and that was 2009. Funny enough, actually, there were three of us that started the graduate program, that particular one, which is a generalist, it was called the Global Leadership Program at the time. And the three of us that started on that day actually had engineering backgrounds. So it was quite interesting to see that, you know, Standard Life were very open to not just graduates who had, you know, actuarial backgrounds, accounting backgrounds, or, you know, your typical finance backgrounds, and were very open to taking on engineering graduates. So obviously that was 2009. I definitely enjoyed it and still just decided to stay in the world of investment. That's kind of my story.
Well, that's wonderful. And do you think that as an engineering student, you were in any way aware of the world of finance and investment, or, you know, was that sort of something you had to discover for yourself?
I know a little bit about finance and investment, I think just from personal interest, but it was something once I started working in the world, I thought, actually, you know, this makes a lot of sense. And because Standard Life, you really focused at the time on pensions and retirement, that got me really thinking about, you know, thinking about my own future, and then started reading up on it. And because I love to learn anyway, so it was kind of a very easy transition for me, just quickly learning, speaking to the people in my team, and, you know, trying to broaden my reach within the organization, and just reading a lot more, and, you know, going to events and finding out more about the sector. That's how I learned. But I felt it was slightly easy transition.
What is it that you like most about the world of finance, investing, etc.? And what are your thoughts on the level of diversity in it?
Finance, investing, I think that investing helps fuel our economies, you know, across the world. By investing, making great investments, whether that's a company doing that or even an individual doing that, you're able to grow different sectors and, you know, actually you can build society as a result of the investments that you're making. Firstly, on a personal level, I love the fact that it helps individuals like ourselves actually create wealth and attain some of our, whether it's our personal or, you know, family goals. For example, being able to invest in an ISA, so, you know, a savings account or in a mutual fund, to be able to save up for a car or for a wedding or a house, you know, making those types of investment choices that actually help you attain some of your goals, create wealth, and then also even fund your retirement in the future. So I think that's really, really great. So that got me going whilst I was working in the sector. And then also, on a larger scale, you know, by companies such as Royal London or other investment managers investing in different sectors, you know, growing sectors, growing companies, we're able to create a sustainable world for all of us. So actually, we're all able to grow, and an investment sector, finance generally helps drive that. Secondly, I think, you know, the question about diversity. So to be honest, there's been a lot of diversity in recent times, and for good reason, to be honest. Diversity in the investment world, I don't think is still enough. I'm sure many people will echo that sentiment, whether that's, you know, gender diversity or it's diversity across, you know, having different racial people from different racial backgrounds or ethnic backgrounds or so. From my experience, I think more can be done, although I would say that some progress is already being made. A lot of companies, a lot of people are bringing this to the forefront of their strategic agenda, whether that's, you know, through talent attraction, retention, development programs, and really thinking about what they can do to improve this. But right now, I think we're still starting from a very low base. I wouldn't labor the point on the things we can do, but I think one crucial one is actually finding the right way to attract a diverse pool of talent to your organization. We need to go beyond the usual channels that we would normally use to attract talent. We need to dig deeper to engage with different communities. So, you know, from my own background, I always think, you know, having come from Nigeria and moved to the UK, I met a lot of people from different walks of life. You know, I had quite a rich experience just, you know, meeting people from different backgrounds. But I still felt that sometimes when I met people from varying backgrounds at times, you know, there were certain pockets of people who maybe due to the environment that they came in when they moved into the country, they weren't always as exposed to as many opportunities or even not even been aware of opportunities that were available to them. And I know everybody would say the internet is there, you can go and Google and you can find stuff. Yes, you can find stuff, but I think that there's still more that we can do to actually dig deeper into these types of communities that we have professional talent who don't actually know where and how to tap into opportunities in finance and or in investment world to get great jobs, to actually start their careers, or, you know, people who are experienced hires who are also still thinking about moving into the sector. So I think that, in terms of talent attraction and thinking of new creative ways to be able to really, really broaden the horizon there with our human resources or our people teams. I'm making that a really big thing as part of our strategic objectives as organizations. Starting early is another thing. I think we need to start early. We need to start thinking about how we get children interested in the sector, and that's across all the different types of schools, not just certain types of schools or people from certain types of backgrounds. And then I think the third one, I would probably say, you know, having real data. So companies within the sector to really get under the skin of the data within their organizations to understand insights locally, and then they can use that to then create some actionable targets and have measures, not just pay lip service to diversity, but, you know, ensure that their own people are well supported as they move up the ladder. Because I think that's where it starts to kind of break off. You know, you can have a lot of diverse talent starting out, but as you move up the career ladder, you don't see as much of a diverse population there. So more companies can actually, you know, start to put some firm measures in place to help their existing talent to move up the ladder.
Excellent points. And I'm glad you mentioned the kind of moving up the ladder, because I think a lot of the focus can often be at the kind of entry stage and attracting talent in the pipeline. But then, you know, if that talent doesn't feel nurtured there and can't move up the ladder, well, then we're going to have problems later in the pipeline. So really good points there. So as I mentioned in the intro, I came across you through this incredibly moving and, you know, somewhat personal LinkedIn post around your move from Scotland to Nigeria recently. How many years did you live in Scotland? And how was that in terms of a cultural experience settling in?
Actually, I moved to London in 2004, and then I moved up to Edinburgh in Scotland in 2009. So I've actually been there for 12 years and a bit.
And so did you always feel at home there then by the end of that time?
I did, yes, because I'm a believer in, you know, you make home wherever you are. I lived in London, it felt like home. I lived in Edinburgh, it did feel like home. And Nigeria still felt like home. So everywhere was home to me.
Can you walk us through your thought process in moving back to Nigeria?
I don't know why it was. To be honest, I couldn't really put my finger on it. But even though I've been living in the UK for over 16 years, I always felt somehow in the back of my mind that I'd move to Nigeria someday. I just didn't know when. I always thought when I left as a student, I thought, you know, it'd be interesting to live in Nigeria as a fully fledged adult and, you know, work in Nigeria and, you know, contribute to the growth of Nigeria and just get involved in some of the things that were very dear to my heart as a young woman. Those reasons always lingered in my mind, but as most people are, you know, when you're somewhere, so I was living in Edinburgh and I had a great community of friends. I had a, you know, great support network there. I had some family, some of my siblings in England. So, you know, I wasn't really missing anything. Things felt like they were going well. Work was fine. So I just, you know, I stayed on for a while. But with this lingering thing in my mind about when would I be able to go back to Nigeria. So the big thing that actually led to me moving to Nigeria was when I met my husband, who was already living in Lagos, Nigeria here, and when we started talking about, okay, so where would we want to live, settle, because I always thought when I get married that I wouldn't want to live apart from my husband for us to have a long-distance relationship, at least not at the start of our marriage. And we were talking about it, and it really, our interests and our thoughts about where we wanted to settle really aligned. I've been thinking about moving to Nigeria. My husband has business in Nigeria, and we just thought, yeah, let's do this. Let's live in Nigeria. So I was really excited. I thought, okay, this is the moment for me to do this and come back.
So how has it gone so far? How have you found going back to the country of your birth? You know, have there been any adjustments or what has changed?
In the last, let's say, decade, I've come back to Nigeria every couple of years because my parents are in Nigeria and I have one other sibling in Nigeria. So I've always tried to maintain contact with Nigeria in some way. So to be honest, coming back wasn't too strange. Things still felt very familiar. Life in Nigeria is quite similar in some ways to life in Scotland, albeit here in Lagos, a lot busier, definitely with traffic. But it's much nicer to me personally in terms of actually seeing a lot more people, social events, and just, I think it's just different because that cultural synergy is there and there's a lot of buzz in Lagos, much more than in Edinburgh, especially with COVID-19, you know, spent the last year and a bit mostly indoors, you know, with lockdown. And so it's very, very different coming back and being able to go about, and it's warm and I'm, you know, back eating a lot of some of the foods that I wasn't eating before, even though I could get a lot of them in Edinburgh still. But it's just nice to be back home. I really enjoy it.
And now if you were to put your kind of finance and investing kind of lens on to look at Nigeria, where do you think some of the interesting investment opportunities or just even, you know, professional opportunities are for you now?
One of the other reasons why I was thinking about coming to Nigeria was because I just felt there were lots and lots of opportunities. So I know in the LinkedIn post that you referred to, I mentioned that I've been watching YouTube videos. I've been watching a number of YouTube videos. I've been following some Nigerian bloggers. And you know, there's so many people doing so many things. Well, real estate was one. Real estate development, especially in Lagos. Certainly, I think because of urbanization, Lagos population here keeps on increasing. There's so much happening here, growth of a lot of sectors. So real estate development is big. And not just from a commercial perspective, but also residential. And a lot of the companies have started to think about social housing as well as part of that, making housing a lot more accessible to more Nigerians. So that to me is a big area of opportunity where investment is being pumped into. And actually from a personal level as well, I have a special interest in that world that I will start to explore now that I'm here. I was also going to add that agriculture is another area that's becoming big as well. I think over the last couple of years, that sector, you hear about some graduates who have moved into agriculture because maybe some of their professional sectors have not been able to get jobs in those areas. So many people are encouraged. We have lots of land and fertile land in Nigeria. And I think being able to get into that sector, there's always going to be demand for food, for resources, and for products that we can grow in our own country. So agriculture has been a big one as well. I think that's one that will continue to grow. And then maybe thirdly, I would add, the world of technology as a whole and fintechs and that space in terms of what they are doing to innovate services and solutions for the everyday consumer in Nigeria is another big space that I see a lot of potential in.
Yeah, very interesting. I've heard that certainly on the technology front that there has been kind of a leapfrogging that's gone on in Africa because certain maybe stages of the infrastructure were not built out, but now they've been able to skip them entirely. So there's great opportunity. Sometimes that leapfrogging can also mean that ESG considerations and sustainability considerations can be built in. At the outset, I know that there have been power cuts, etc. There's probably a need to look for efficient ways of using energy as well as renewable sources.
Absolutely. Yes, you're right. And because when you're thinking about solar as an example, there's such a huge opportunity to explore that across the continent. So I think we definitely have areas of opportunity within that space, especially that sustainability perspective. I've been hearing a lot of that in terms of the narrative here and sustainable development goals as well, and a lot of ministries and development agencies really wanted to link into that agenda and ensure that is fed in to their objectives right from the start of some of their strategic work.
I'm going back now to your personal journey. So you've had a career both in the UK and now starting in Nigeria. Have there been any setbacks or challenges or even mistakes that you've made throughout the course of your career so far that you've learned from?
Yes, absolutely. I think, life is not always rosy as much as we all would like it to be. For me, it's how I deal with situations. That's the really important bit. I haven't had too many setbacks, I would say, but I've had one or two bumps in my career. And one example that I'll share is from a couple of years into my time at Standard Life, where there was a big shakeup in our department, quite a big area, actually, a big function. And my role at the time was made redundant. And for me, it felt like such a blow. It really did feel very personal. And I think it was just because I was young and I'd always excelled in everything that I did up to that point. And so when that happened, I took it quite seriously, but took it in my stride and I thought to myself, I have a couple of options here. I can decide to be frustrated and discouraged by this, or really get under the skin of why it's happened and actually what can I do to change the situation. And I think one other overlay, which was slightly interesting for me, was because I was being sponsored by the company. So my visa was linked to, working at Standard Life. So basically, if I didn't have a job, then that would be me having to, one, come back to Nigeria, or get another company to get sponsorship for me, which can be quite challenging. But, you know, to get my stride, I was really pleased. I use my network within the business and, you know, actively supported by my family, and I was able to secure a new role, ended up staying for more years, and now I'm a British citizen, which is great. And I was able to bounce back pretty quickly from that experience. So, you know, one lesson for me there was, it doesn't matter what happens. And with these things, to be honest, organizations make these changes all the time. There's no need to take them personally, but it's just what you do after them, that's what matters.
Absolutely. And thanks for sharing that, because I think it's not always appreciated that not all professions come with that risk. I mean, there's not all professions have, I suppose, the level of cycles and downsizing that goes with that. So I think, you know, going in with a kind of eyes wide open approach, and I think, as you said, really not taking it personally is such an important lesson to learn. And it does get, it's for some, it can happen more than once, and it certainly gets easier the second time, even though it can often open opportunity. So one thing I can never resist doing is when I see something really interesting on someone's LinkedIn profile, I love to ask about it. So you have an interest in interior design and, in fact, a qualification there, a diploma. Can you just talk a little about that interest and what inspires you?
Okay, so this is an interest I've had since I was probably in my early teens in Nigeria. And I remember when I was living in Ibadan at the time, so I lived with my sisters, we shared a room, and definitely we always look forward to switching things up in our room, in our bedroom. I think that those were like the early days of my keen interest in interior design, you know, move the bed this way and turn the desk and the chair this other way and put in some flowers. But that was like interior decoration, because there is a difference between those two things. But I think it was definitely something that I loved, seeing spaces aesthetically pleasing and functional. It was definitely something that was always there for me. So I started reading up on interior design. I always liked to buy the magazines in the supermarkets, and I just loved, you know, just looking at beautiful spaces. That was what got me interested in it from a very young age. And so whilst I was working at Standard Life, I thought, you know, what can I do to gain more knowledge in this space? As I said earlier, I am a keen learner. I don't necessarily learn to be the expert in all things, but I learn to, you know, just add to my existing plethora of knowledge. So I decided to do the diploma. It was an online course, and it was for 1 year. And I did it in the evenings and weekends, and it was just really, really interesting. I haven't actually used it in my professional career as such, but when I had a stint at Moody Monday, which was in between my time at Standard Life and Royal London, I was working at Moody Monday, and Moody Monday was a textile design company and designing wallpaper, sort of textiles for furniture. And, you know, that was plunging myself completely into the world of interior design. It was a bit of a break that I had between jobs, and it was wonderful. And I think the diploma definitely helped me there. But I've definitely since moved on, you know, came back into financial services, but I still have a keen interest in interior design. I'm still inspired by all sorts of design styles. And I think now being back in Nigeria, there's definitely something there for me. I don't know what it is yet, but I think it's going to come in handy for a future venture at some point, definitely.
Well, you know, I think actually, if anything, it's going to become more and more relevant to our workplace, because, you know, we've had this remote existence for over a year. Now we're looking at rethinking offices and, you know, with collaboration space, and we want to create spaces that are inspiring. I've heard of these kind of almost thinking, like, you know, libraries, or, you know, creating space where people can be creative. So I think, as you mentioned, you like balance and you like creating a sense of calm. And yeah, I think that actually interior design is going to become ever increasingly more important in our workplaces. Well, you could well find opportunities at least to weave it in. Staying on your personal story, were there any key people throughout your journey so far, whether personally or professionally, who had an impact on you and how?
So I have to start with my parents, because they're the closest to me and they're the ones that have influenced me the most along the way. So My parents are, they're brilliant people. So my dad is an engineer as well by profession. He definitely stayed on, but he's now retired, but continues to be active in that space. And my mom worked in computing as well. She retired a couple of years ago, and they are the most hardworking pair. They are very, very loving, and you know, they showed myself and my siblings. There are five of us. They've definitely showed us what it means to work hard, to love people more, to always give things your best shot. And you know, they presented us with a lot of great opportunities to learn, to develop, and to make the most of, you know, the opportunities that are presented to us. So definitely my parents have influenced my, you know, how I am, my values, my beliefs, and also they have helped my personal life. So, you know, paying thousands of pounds for my degree, you know, my bachelor's degree is no small feat, especially whilst they were working. So I definitely appreciate them for that. They live in Nigeria, and I'm sure they are extremely glad that they have another child back in Nigeria, closer to them. So definitely they influenced me. But I've also had, you know, some other people. So I've had some mentors professionally along the way, and personal mentors who I've known for like over a decade. I've also had my line managers, especially my line managers at Royal London. They've been very, very influential in helping shape my career and really sort of nudging me along and presenting great opportunities for me to use my skills and to challenge myself. And you know, a lot of them have been great inspiration to me, and mostly women, actually, which is interesting. Mostly women, and I think they just, you know, see me as, you know, a younger woman who they can help champion and who they can support professionally, and I've been super grateful to them for that.
That is very inspiring, I think, and also reassuring to hear that women are continuing to inspire other women in the workforce. It's so important that they do. Think about any words of wisdom or any creed or motto that you live by. Is there anything that you've heard throughout your life or something that you like to remember on a regular basis?
Certainly, there's one, and this has helped me so much in my life, to be honest. So I'm a Christian, and my faith plays a huge role in how I live, how I see people, how I see the world, how I love people. And one of the pieces of wisdom, it's a verse in the Bible, and this is one I think about regularly, and I always link to it regularly. It goes, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. And basically, this drives me. So even when I'm doing something that is mundane or, you know, maybe glamorous or actually just plain boring stuff, I want to still give it my best. I want to do it well. And I think that's, you know, many times opportunities are presented to us and we have to make the most of these opportunities, whether they are fantastic, whether they're boring. Sometimes, you know, it's the boring things that can lead to the exciting things. So, you know, doing everything that I do with my might, giving it my best, that verse has helped me throughout my life, and it's one that I'll continue to hold on to.
Very inspiring. And my last question is around any advice you might have to your younger self. You're not going back too far in your case, but maybe to that young student coming to study in England. Is there anything that you know now that you wish you had known back then?
That life isn't about going in a straight line. It's not about following a certain path, you know, because I think when I was much younger, it was very easy to see how, you know, you went to primary school, you went to secondary school, and then you go to uni, and then you get a job. And that's kind of the narrative that you hear. And, you know, you do the job for a number of years, or maybe do a couple of jobs, and then you move on, and you retire, and that's it. And you follow a kind of path. But actually, you know, the older I get, the more I know that it's not always going to be like that. It's not going to be like that for everyone. It's more about being open to learning, being open to new experiences, just having the courage to try new things. And, you know, as you try new things, you open yourself up to more challenges, to richer experiences as a human being. And I think that is a much more wonderful experience to have than to think this is a path that I need to go down, or this is what is expected of me and I need to follow this particular way. I don't think that anymore, definitely not. So I'd advise my younger self, or people who are younger than I am, that definitely be open to learning. Don't be afraid to break away from the norm where it makes sense. And don't be afraid of failure. Don't be afraid to fail, because sometimes through failure you can actually learn.
Well, thank you so much, Toyin. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I am really taking away from this, certainly your love of learning is an inspiration, and your brave and vulnerable LinkedIn post that you put up there about your move, about your latest adventure, was, I think, extremely inspiring. And you certainly, the reaction spoke for itself. So the very best of luck with that move. I wish you every success. And thank you for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you very much, Ifan. It's been wonderful to have this discussion with you. Thank you for having me as well.
I'm Ifan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces Focus podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.